Our next speaker is going to be Denise Adams, and Denise is going to speak to us about the medical aspects of management of these cases, which is as equally valuable, I would add.
So thank you very much. I know some of you in the audience are going to have seen these slides again because I was just at LA Children's Hospital. But I am actually a pediatric hematologist-oncologist, and I'm a little more of an oncologist than I am a hematologist. I have no disclosures except for the medicines. None of them are actually FDA approved. And the first slide is really about sort of me. So about 20 years ago, I got involved in taking care of vascular anomalies, and I became incredibly frustrated because as a oncologist, I was frustrated with what we did not have. So way back when, and we're going to call ourselves vascular anomalists, there was pattern recognition, there was a classification system, which was very simple, there were surgical and interventional treatments, there was limited medical options. In fact, the medical options were all from the treatments that we had for hemangiomas. There were no clinical trials, and there were no collaborative groups, which was totally opposite of what I had as a pediatric oncologist. But it's very exciting to say that now we have a much improved classification system. We're starting to have standards of practice for what we do. We have these interdisciplinary centers that are popping up, and we have mentors and mentees for these centers. There are medical therapies now, and they're just not medical therapies that have been used just to treat hemangiomas. We have phenotypes, we have genotypes, and we're actually correlating them together, and we actually do have clinical trials, and we're starting to work on some biomarkers. So I wanted to talk a little bit about what we need to do to develop a trial. And so this takes me back to how sometimes we have one patient that can make a difference. And in 2007, we had a patient when I was at Cincinnati Children's Hospital that came to see us that had a very dark black leg that happened about 24 to 48 hours after this patient, who was a two-month-old, had immunizations into that thigh. And this patient came in with this dark black leg, had a platelet count of 3,000, a fibrinogen that was undetectable, and we really felt that this patient had a Kaposiform hemangioendothelioma. And so when I was at Cincinnati Children's, we had a standard way that we treated these patients, and these patients, we first started them on vincristine and steroids, and then after several months, this patient failed because the platelet count dropped and she started having bleeding, and we switched to Cytoxan, and then we added Amicar, and then we actually would have tumor boards on these patients, and we added something called Avastin, which is a VEGF inhibitor. And at this time, we had been working with a nephrologist, and we were looking at the PIK3CA pathway. And I want you to notice the simple nature of this PIK3CA pathway. And so we knew that patients that had P10 mutations, so a tumor suppressor gene, had an increased risk for vascular anomalies. We also knew that patients that had tuberous sclerosis had vascular anomalies, and also patients that had TIE2 mutations, which are part of this whole system, had vascular anomalies as well. And so we surmised that perhaps an mTOR inhibitor, because out of this PIK3CA pathway, the only medicine that we had available at this time was an mTOR inhibitor. And so we felt that this patient was going to die if we did nothing, and so we tried sirolimus on this patient. So again, this was not without thinking, so we thought about it. We presented it at a tumor board, and we actually got compassionate use for this patient to have sirolimus. And so this patient started sirolimus. The platelet count was about 10,000. After 2 weeks, the platelet count was 40,000. And then after about 4 months, the patient had a normal platelet count, a normal fibrinogen, and then it had started to have a decrease in the size of the lesion. And so what we did, we had other patients that came to see us at Cincinnati Children's but had very complicated malformations, and so we treated them with sirolimus as well. We tried to focus on patients with lymphatic disease because at the time, lymphatic disease was in the research. There was a lot of research on lymphangiogenesis and mTOR inhibition for lymphangiogenesis. And so we published that series of patients, but we had a rule at Cincinnati that if you treated more than 3 patients with a drug that was off-label, you had to start a protocol. And so we got together with some of the oncologists who had been using sirolimus for neurofibromatosis, and we started a protocol. We were very fortunate that we got FDA funding. We actually added Boston as a second site in 2012. And we focused this on vascular anomaly patients that mostly had a lymphatic component to them, except we also included patients with P10 mutations. So we had had AVMs as part of it as well. And our aim was to look at efficacy, but also safety, and we also looked at some biomarkers, and we accrued about 60 patients. So this was our response, and again, our response definition was as an oncologist would have a response definition. So it was very, very a tight response. We had MRI indications, and so no one could have a complete response unless the lesion was completely gone. We also looked at quality of life, and so people had to have normalization of their quality of life, and we looked at something called functional assessment. And what we found is about 83% of patients had a partial response after course six, so 6 months into therapy, and about 85% had a partial response at course 12. And this is some of the response. So I show this to hematologists, and they said, why are you calling that a partial response? I mean, that is a tremendous response. But you see there's still disease there. So as an oncologist, that is just a partial response. So this was a patient that had a KAG lesion, and this is the MRI before and at the end of therapy. This is skin improvement of a KAG lesion prior to sirolimusin and at the end of therapy. And this is a patient that has a generalized lymphatic anomaly with bone lesions who came to us and wasn't walking, and you see before and after when the patient is walking and is free of the disease. So now I'm going to explain to you how VASC, so starting clinical trials takes a team. And so this is how we made our team. This is how our VAC team is here, where you have leadership and you have a core group of physicians and you have ancillary physicians. And when and after you establish your clinical team, then you have to start thinking about your research team because you need other specialists to do that. Also, you need collaboration. So as you start research, you need to collaborate with other people and other centers. And so there's a lot of collaboration that's been formed in vascular anomalies. Recently, we formed a consortium called the Consortium for the Investigation of Vascular Anomalies. We have 16 sites included, and it's the PIs are all hem-onc physicians, but the associate PIs can be surgeons, can be radiologists. There's also a group in ENT that's formed. There's the HIG group, that's the hemangioma investigator group in dermatology. So I think all of these groups and collaboration are needed to move clinical trials forward. And it truly is time for us to think outside of the box for the treatment of these patients. And you know what? Sirolimus is really just not enough because we have patients, we know clearly who does well with sirolimus, but there are patients that don't necessarily do well with sirolimus. We also know that sirolimus has some long-term side effects. It is an immunosuppressive agent. We do know that there have been some lymphomas reported, some skin cancer reported, so we need to move forward. So remember that very simple picture that I showed you of this PIK3CA pathway. Well, this is the pathway now. And this is actually exciting, and this is from an article that Aaron Green wrote. And so we have the PIK3CA pathway here, and we have PROS. So these are all the malformations that have PIK3CA somatic mutations. But we also, on the other side, have a RASA1 pathway, a GNAC pathway, and this is important for things like congenital hemangiomas, for Kaposiform lymphangiomatosis. Let's talk a little bit now about rare phenotypes and the unmet needs of these rare phenotypes. So AVMs are a particularly rare phenotype where we know that they progress over time. And this is a picture of someone that's had surgery and intervention and still progressed over time. And we know that our own Aaron Green has a passion for trying to figure out what's going on for AVMs. And he's looked at the molecular abnormalities of these and found that 16 out of 25 have mutations in MAP2 kinase. And what this means is that we may be able to use a MEK inhibitor to take care of these patients who have failed surgery and failed intervention. We also know that there's a phenotype called Kaposiform lymphangiomatosis, or some really significant GLA, or central collecting lymphatic anomalies. And we know that recently, to be published, this article was accepted for publication by a Dr. Couric who worked with us at Boston Children's, 8 of 10 of the patients that were studied had NRAS mutations, so RASopathies. So mechanist or a MEK inhibitor could potentially be used for these patients. We know that there are new studies out there. There's an AKT inhibitor, so part of that study as well, that we have open at Boston, and it's actually, we've had 2 CLOVES patients that have had great results with not as significant of a toxicity profile as sirolimus. And I don't know if all of you have seen the article in Nature, but there was an article in Nature that a nephrologist from Paris published on a patients with PIK3CA inhibitors. So he had a patient that was very devastated and renal failure come and basically put on this drug and had a tremendous response. This was very quickly obtained for compassionate use in France. This would never happen so quickly here. And then he actually developed a mouse model, and he treated 17 more patients from the two he initially treated, and I would recommend you all go out and get this article and look at it. It's really pretty amazing. So what are our future directions? Our future directions are to continue the collaboration, to continue with consortia. We have to focus on trial readiness, so we need natural history data. We need phenotype-genotype correlation. We need to know risk stratification, improve response criteria. We need interdisciplinary trials, and we need innovation. So thank you.